Archbishop Jan invited us before we began to reflect in silence on who Jesus is for us. And so I just want to continue that for a moment, if I may. I want you to imagine that wind that's blowing in the window is blowing on us off the Sea of Galilee, and we are gathered at the shore listening to Jesus teach us. Imagine that for a moment and hear Jesus say to us these words: on the day of judgment, it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon than for you. We learn through our studies that Matthew's gospel is a message written for an early generation of Jewish Christians. Matthew's audience was a group trying to explain its growing faith in Jesus, that Jesus was the fulfillment of God's promise to the Jewish people in terms that were based on Jewish teachings, terms that would give them a sense of justification as they were living through the wrenching experience of being evicted from their synagogues. So we entered the story this morning remembering that we are hearing an account written for a community whose worldview was greatly shaped by Jewish ideas, and for whom Jesus is the master teacher of those ideas. So how then shall we hear the judgment that Jesus is issuing today? Let's start with that list of cities that we heard: Chorazin, Bethsaida, Tyre, Sidon, Capernaum. To our ears, to the ears of the people in our pews, this can just sort of sound like a list of cities that Jesus is giving a bad review to on TripAdvisor. But the people for whom the gospel was written, for them there was a sharp line that divided these cities into two groups. Chorazin and Capernaum were places very familiar, not just to Jesus, but to any Jewish person, because they were in Galilee. And Bethsaida was very near to Galilee, just across the River Jordan, on the northern end of the Sea of Galilee. Anyone who was part of the Jewish community thought of it as a Jewish town. And in John's gospel, we know that Bethsaida is the home of fully a quarter of the disciples, Peter and Andrew and Philip. On the other side of the line is Tyre and Sidon. They were and are cities on the Mediterranean coast, north of the places where the Jewish folks lived. In those days, they were part of Phoenicia, the Roman province of Syria. Today, they're part of Lebanon. So in the ears of Matthew's audience, when Jesus speaks these words, he's speaking about us and them. He's speaking about places that were within the Jewish world and places that were beyond it. And we are meant to understand outside the terms of the covenant. And here is the first problem for those people hearing Jesus and for us. Jesus is saying that the places we regard as not part of our world, as beyond the boundaries of our community and outside the limits of God's inclusion, those places may be acting more in line with God's standards than our own communities are. That turns out to be a theme in Jesus' teaching, that the standard is not belonging, but behavior, and that the behavior that most vividly reflects God's love in the world is often seen in those that we imagine to be less than or beyond the limits or outside our group. Samaritans, tax collectors, publicans, the unclean, the poor, the uneducated, gay people, Muslims. But there's something more here for us, something that preaches a vivid critique against our Western consumerist culture of individualism and autonomy. And it is simply this: when Jesus is teaching Matthew's audience in the way we heard this morning, and therefore us as well, He's saying plainly that sin is not merely a spiritual sickness at the level of individuals. Jesus is teaching that sin is a social phenomenon, a matter for whole cities, whole societies. And here, friends, is the most difficult news. Judgment comes not just to us individually, but to us collectively. Our societies will be judged. We struggle greatly with this in my own country. When the church raises a clear critique against the sin of white supremacy and the structural systems that perpetuate racism, the predictable answer is, am I to be held responsible for sins of my ancestors? How can you assign guilt to me, an individual who had nothing to do with these things? Now, you might hear that and think, well, America is Tyre and Sidon to me. It is beyond the limit of what I think of as my community, part of my spiritual universe. But just yesterday, the Anglican Center invited all of us into a deeper consideration of the social sinfulness in which all of us are implicated, the devastation of our climate by our collective choices, the destruction we are causing when the individual choices we each make in our consumerist culture grow up to an aggregate social scale. Minds and hearts and souls shaped by the Western experience have difficulty thinking in terms of collective destiny and collective responsibility. And that is no less true of places and leaders in parts of the world shaped through the experience of colonialism into a kind of subconscious individualism. We see this over and over in the corporatization of culture. But friends, we should not be surprised by this, because our God is a God in eternal community. We proclaim a God in Trinity, a God who is not only one God, but God in three persons. And if that is the God we preach, then we should scarcely be surprised that salvation is a question not only of individual souls, but of the societies that humans create. We Anglicans are an international and cross-cultural church. We have a particular vocation to deepen our understanding and our teaching about the social dimensions of spiritual evil. Systems that destroy God's beloved creation or deny the dignity of every human being, systems that still yield the trafficking of vulnerable people or permit the rot of corruption to weaken and destroy the civil order that best protects the weakest in our society. These are present in our midst. They are systemic sinfulness because they corrupt and destroy the creatures of God. And they exist both within and across the places in which we Anglicans work and witness to the gospel. The cries of those who are harmed and degraded by social sin are there night and day, if we have ears to hear them. We are not all that much different from the people for whom Matthew's gospel was written. We still think in terms of us and them, as though social sin were some kind of spiritual European cup. When voices from the church begin speaking of the failings of our society to live up to God's dream for all humanity, very quickly the response is made, but it is so much worse in that other country. We are so much better than Tyre or Sidon. But that is a failure of our moral imagination. After all, our Christian responsibility is not only to God, it is to God's people. In his brilliant little book, The God Who Is Love, the American Roman Catholic theologian Fritz Bauerschmidt has described our task in these words. I might think it is easier to love God whom I imagine vaguely as something, somewhere, that is everything good and lovable, than it is to love my grimy and annoying neighbor, who is so insistently there in my face making demands. But that is because the God I claim to love is a fantasy of my own creation. Not the grimy and annoying God who is there on the cross making demands. I cannot love that God without loving my neighbor, because that God has become my neighbor. In God's wisdom, each one of us has been set within communities and cultures for the very purpose of bringing about the day that God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. So let us always beware the selfish seeking of a merely private, personal relationship with God, a God who is, after all, a community in Trinity. For God calls us, as communities and cultures, to reflect and make real the power of love to transform the world. Amen.